Well, right now on the show, we're going to go back to the very birth of football, right back to the beginning, because the whole thing started in Sheffield, as some of you will know, with Sheffield FC. And there's a new book out written by veteran journalist Steve Tongue. It's called Yorkshire Turf Wars, A Football History. The book looks at the history of football in Yorkshire and football rivalries in Yorkshire. And I'm delighted to say Steve Tongue joins me now. Steve, thanks ever so much for joining us.
Pleasure, Martin.
Now, it all started in Sheffield, and your book goes back to the very beginning and where these historic football rivalries, and there's quite a few throughout Yorkshire, these historic football rivalries all started. So take us back to the beginning.
Well, if we go as far as 1855, there are kickabouts from a bunch of lads in Sheffield who within a couple of years decide that they will form an actual club. It is the club, Sheffield FC, that's now recognised by FIFA and UEFA as the oldest in the world. I occasionally call it the oldest independent football club because you have somewhere like Cambridge University where they were playing even earlier and where they actually formulated their own laws before 1850. But Sheffield FC get the accolade, and a couple of men, a solicitor and a wine merchant, I believe, decided they would form an actual club. The question, of course, if you only have one football club, is who do you actually play against?
Yes.
And for a long time, they had married men against singles, or A to L surnames against M to Z surnames. And eventually, within a couple of years, a club not far away in Sheffield, known as Hallam, started up. And so on Boxing Day 1860, we had what is regarded as the first ever inter-club match in the world, the result of which was Hallam 0, Sheffield 2.
So that was the first, not just the first, so the first local derby. I mean, what was there a sort of fierce rivalry between the two teams?
Very much so. They managed a return game quite soon afterwards, which apparently went on for 3 hours until it got dark. And they played variously 15 to 18 aside. It wasn't 11 aside, and it wasn't quite the game we know these days. But Hallam got their revenge and won by 3-0. And no, I mean, bear in mind that football, what we call football, association football, derived in many ways from the sort of rugby games which were played largely in the public schools and the universities, and it could be pretty rough stuff. Even in these local derbies, there was, they tended to play on Boxing Day, Sheffield and Hallam, so they may have been on the booze the day or so before, and there were occasions when it did become quite fierce. Waistcoats came off and blows were exchanged, for instance, was one quote from the local paper. But it was a fierce game in those days. I mean, until quite late, until after this time, there were still features of the rugby game, such as catching the ball and making a mark, and what the rugby players love to call hacking, which seems to mean kicking people's shins. And that was one of the main sticking points. When rugby finally broke away from association football after the FA was founded in 1863, it was the rugby people who said, we must have hacking. So they went away and kept on hacking at each other's shins and throwing the ball around, and football went its own merry way.
Yeah, interesting that it all started in Sheffield, because a lot of people say that the Steel City Derby between Wednesday and United, when they happen to be in the same division, is one of the fiercest in the Football League.
I think it is. It's a great derby from my point of view. I've obviously looked at a lot of local derbies in all these four books, and it's two clubs in the city, one blue, one red, and the best thing about it, really, they've played generally at the same sort of level for many years. They've actually both had an awful lot of ups and downs. They're in the top eight clubs in the country, I think, for most promotions and relegations. They've had about 50 between them. But when they do get together, and it's finally happening this season after a little break of 4 years or so, it is pretty fierce.
Yeah, and other derbies I think you've probably found this out in the other books that you've done, you know, in London and the West Midlands, etc., and Lancashire. A lot of the derbies are This is just me talking here, so you'll tell me if I'm right or I'm wrong. It's sort of urban rivalries. So the people in, say, Huddersfield, for instance, thinks that Leeds, you know, Leeds are, if you like, the big city team. Huddersfield feel inferior in some way. And that's why, you know, if Huddersfield can get one over on Leeds, and the same applies to Bradford as well, then they're especially pleased.
Yes, that's exactly right. And what you get in one city, of course, you tend to get more people going into the same schools and factories and offices the next day or the Monday after the Saturday match or whatever. And that's a good example. Bradford, Leeds, Huddersfield, a good example of, in Bradford City's case, the slightly smaller club who constantly feel that the they're being outdone, not given enough credit for by the big teams and so on. In fact, when you mention West Yorkshire, one of the odd things I did find and was surprised by was that it took so long to spread out, organised football took so long to spread out from South Yorkshire to the West, and that Leeds, Huddersfield, Bradford around there was very much rugby territory. Even 20 years after Sheffield started, there's a report in one of the local papers about how some players from Sheffield were sent to Leeds in order to introduce the association game to the football players of Leeds. And this is 20 years after Sheffield have... I love the idea of these missionaries going into to convert the heathen rugby players of Leeds, which they did eventually. But by 1900, for instance, you had, as well as Sheffield United and Sheffield Wednesday, you had Barnsley, Rotherham, Doncaster, all down in the south, all established clubs. And it wasn't until the start of the 20th century that you actually got Huddersfield and the Leeds club.
I mean, moving a bit closer to our time, Steve, because you watched your first ever football match in 1957. But moving close to that time, immediately post-war, that was a huge boom town for a boom time for clubs like Leeds, and in fact, throughout the north of England, football was huge. And you know, I was brought up in Manchester, and I can remember a crowd of 84,000 at Main Road for Manchester City. Crowds were massive. There was a huge appetite for football and local derbies, especially after the Second World War.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, those men who were fortunate enough to come back from the war were desperate for some entertainment. Slowly, as employment increased again, they had a little bit of money in their pockets, and other things such as Saturday afternoon working had virtually been stopped in most of the factories and so on. And everybody just wanted some entertainment. I'm sure cinemas did exactly the same, didn't they? The cinema audiences increased enormously. I mean, you've got one or two downsides to it, because very soon after the Second World War was the tragedy at Burnden Park, where Bolton playing Stoke, and there were just far too many people trying to get in, and 30 odd killed. That was, they all come to see Stanley Matthews, who of course was one of the great post-war entertainers, and everywhere he went we put another 10,000 or so on the gate. No, that was the boom time for attendances, and we went from there to the mid 80s. And all the troubles with hooliganism in particular, and the shocking state of the grounds. And in 85 to 86, I think, was the very worst season for attendances. I was a sports reporter at the time, and, well, I was actually a football reporter, but I used to say to anybody I met when they say, what do you do? I say, oh, sports reporter, I do a bit of cricket and tennis and football. But it wasn't anything to be terribly proud of, to be associated with football in the 80s. Yeah. And then, of course, it suddenly took off. The 1990 World Cup, most people have dated it to. England doing so well, and Paul Gascoigne's tears and so on. And then the Premier League, which Leeds, of course, went into as the champions. And the two Sheffield clubs were in there as well. And it's slowly taken off, and attendances are not quite back to the post-war level, because most of the grounds are smaller, although they're big. Some clubs are trying to enlarge again.
Yes, they are.
But it certainly picked up anyway.
Yes, and with the, you know, you mentioned the Premier League starting in 1992, and with the influx of foreign players and foreign managers, are these, you know, you look at Manchester City, Manchester United, or, well, obviously in your book it's Yorkshire, so you're looking at the Yorkshire derbies. Given that there are so many foreign players, Do you still have the intensity? I know you hear players say, "Oh, we've told the foreign players how important it is, you know, that we beat Bradford City or whatever." But do you think the intensity of local derbies has maybe eased off now there are so many foreigners in football?
I think it probably has. I mean, it's still there on terraces, very much so, because those are your local people. But part of the outcome of so many foreign players, as you say, is that there are fewer and fewer local players. And the ones who really cared were the people like Tony Adams at Arsenal and people at Spurs and Liverpool and Manchester, the same people who'd actually been brought up as supporters of that club. So they knew from a very young age what a local derby meant. It must be difficult for the other thing about foreign players, of course, is that with a few exceptions, they don't tend to stay there for 10 or 12 years. They do 2 or 3 years and then go off somewhere else. So that is one of the things, and it's a shame, and it may even apply to the managers. I'm sure the managers tried to get it across as well, and they all know about local derbies where they come from, but whether they can translate that into Sheffield United against Sheffield Wednesday is another matter.
There's some fantastic stories in your book, so let's look at a couple of those. Tell me about the Yorkshire club that was offered £50,000 to move to London. When was that?
That was just before the war. I mean, one of the things you come across with all these clubs in all these books is that most of them have had financial problems at some stage. In fact, the club may be one that your younger listeners have not even heard of, which was Bradford Park Avenue.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously grown up as the big local rivals of Bradford City, and for a while were the more established club. But they were having a financial crisis just before the Second World War, which was a bad time for a lot of clubs because of the economic situation in the country in the 1930s, and they were allegedly offered £50,000 to do a sort of, well, it wouldn't even been a Wimbledon going to Milton Keynes, would it have been more dramatic than that, to go from Bradford to London? But apparently it got pretty short shrift, although of course what happened later was that Bradford went out of the league and became one of these several Yorkshire clubs that have virtually gone bust and had to start up again, as they've done.
Yes, I mean, that was quite a fierce local derby, wasn't it? Bradford Park Avenue versus Bradford City. I've got a friend, and he was a supporter of Bradford Park Avenue and carried on supporting them right the way. I mean, they still do have, even though they're not in the league, they have a certain, quite a decent supporter base.
Oh, yes, very much so. I mean, for a city, I mean, it's a decent city with a decent population, Bradford, but to... that's part of the problem, of course, with local derbies and local clubs fighting for attendances. And Park Avenue, understandably, have come off worst in that recently. But the other thing was, of course, that when they went out of the league, it was before you had this automatic relegation and promotion into what's now the National League. And so it was regarded as just a disaster to actually drop out. You were voted out by the other clubs, which in many ways made it even worse, knowing that they didn't want you and they'd rather have some progressive southern club in there instead of you. So it was regarded as a bit of a disaster. And generally, they would, clubs like Bradford and Workington and Southport, who were voted out of the league, they would stagger on. But the financial situation got worse and worse. And so we will never know what happened if Bradford Park Avenue had come to London. Although, actually, mentioning that, they did come to London once for a very famous game, which I've got a photograph of in the book, when they came to play Arsenal at Highbury just after the war and beat the mighty Arsenal, who were the league champions. And the photo in the book shows a future England manager playing for Bradford Park Avenue, who was Ron Greenwood, the centre-half and captain on that famous day, who described it as one of the greatest days of his career when they came to Highbury and beat the Arsenal in the Cup.
Wow, that is an interesting one. Just finally, who was the, you mentioned foreign players, who was the foreign signing who said that the local women, I don't know whether he's talking about Leeds or Bradford or wherever, but the local women were ugly and drank too much?
Well, I hope we're not libelling him, but the quote was pretty well spread around. One of the things foreign players don't realise is when they go back home and give these interviews to their own country, that it will eventually get back to them. And Georgi Hristov, who had played briefly for Barnsley, went home and did an interview in Bulgaria and was not complimentary about Barnsley women. A dreadful slur and libel, I'm sure you'd agree.
A vicious calumny. Steve, best of luck with the book. Thanks ever so much for talking to us. The book's called Yorkshire Turf Wars, A Football History, and Steve Tongue was our guest. Steve, thank you ever so much for joining us.
Great pleasure. Thank you.